He pulled out onto Sunset and executed a tidy U-turn. They headed back in the direction of the Mondrian, over asphalt thinly littered with the desiccated biomass of palms.
"I've been a fan for years," Alberto said.
"Alberto is concerned with history as internalized space," contributed Odile from a little too close behind Hollis's head. "He sees this internalized space emerge from trauma, always from trauma." "Trauma," Hollis repeated involuntarily as they passed the pink dot. "Stop at the dot, please, Alberto. I need cigarettes."
"Hollis," said Odile accusingly, "you tell me you are not smoke."
"I just started," Hollis said.
"But we are here," said Alberto, taking a left at Larrabee and parking.
"Where's here?"
Hollis asked, cracking the door and preparing, perhaps, to run.
Alberto looked grave, but not particularly crazy. "I'll get my equipment. I'd like you to experience the piece first. Then, if you like, we can discuss it."
He got out. Hollis did too. Larrabee sloped steeply down toward the illuminated flats of the city, so steeply that she found it uncomfortable to stand. Alberto helped Odile from the back seat. She propped herself against the Volks and screwed her hands into the front of her sweatshirt.
"I am cold," she complained.
And it was cooler now, Hollis noticed, without the warm blast of the wind. She looked up at a graceless pink hotel that loomed over them, while Alberto, draped in his Pendleton, rummaged in the back of the car. He came up with a battered aluminum camera case, crisscrossed with black gaffer tape. A long silver car glided silently past on Sunset as they followed Alberto up the steep sidewalk.
"What's here, Alberto? What are we here to see?" Hollis demanded as they reached the corner.
He knelt and opened the case. The interior was padded with blocks of foam. He extracted something that she at first mistook for a welder's protective mask.
"Put this on,"
he handed it to her. A padded headband with a sort of visor.
Virtual reality?
She hadn't heard the term spoken aloud in years, she thought, as she pronounced it.
"The hardware lags behind," he said, "at least the kind I can afford."
He took a laptop from the case and opened it, powering it up. Hollis put the visor on. She could see through it, though only dimly. She looked toward the corner of Clark and Sunset, making out the marquee of the whiskey. Alberto reached out and gently fumbled with a cable at the side of the visor.
"This way," he said, leading her along the sidewalk to a low, windowless, black-painted facade.
She squinted up at the sign. The Viper Room.
"Now," he said,
and she heard him tap the laptop's keyboard. Something shivered in her field of vision.
"Look. Look here."
She turned, following his gesture, and saw a slender, dark-haired body face down on the sidewalk.
"Halloween night, 1993, said Odile.
Hollis approached the body that wasn't there, but was. Alberto was following her with the laptop, careful of the cable. She felt as if he were holding his breath. She was holding hers. The boy seemed bird-like in death, the arch of his cheekbone, as she bent forward, casting its own small shadow. His hair was very dark. He wore dark, pinstriped trousers and a dark shirt.
"Who?"
she asked, finding her breath.
"River Phoenix,"
said Alberto, quietly. She looked up toward the marquee of the whiskey, then down again, struck by the fragility of the white neck.
"River Phoenix was blonde," she said.
"He'd dyed it," Alberto said. "Dyed it for a role."